You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
On first down, throws to the end zone, touchdown, caught by Kevin Elliott in his first game as a Hamilton Ticat. Look out here. Here he comes. There he goes. Brandon Banks is going to take this one to the house again. Unbelievable, this guy. Brandon Banks scores. Touchdown, Terrence Tolliver.
That was sick.
Don't go away, Matt Dunnigan.
That was sick right there. The timing of that throw, I mean, that was beautiful. That resembled Zach Collaros from last year.
Ray has a tip, and it's Simone Lawrence again! Exclamation point! Touchdown!
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike. The season's here. We got a lot to talk about, so I think we just dive right in. The preseason's over. The regular season's upon us, but we can't look ahead to this regular season until we talk about the last game of the preseason. Ticats had a game in Hamilton at Tim Hortons Field on Friday night. Unfortunately, they lost to the Toronto Argonauts by the score of 23-16. Once again, this team had a lead at a major point in this game. They were up 16-0 at one point, and they blew it just like they did against Ottawa. I think they had a 9-point lead against the Red Blacks, and they blew that one and lost that game. So the Ticats finished the preseason at 0-2. Not that that really matters all that much, right?
No, I don't think it matters. I mean, the Argonauts were 2-0, and it doesn't matter at all, I don't think, because those games don't matter, really, except for the players, obviously, that are trying to make this team.
Exactly. So let's get into what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't like. And if you don't mind, Mike, I'd like to start with talking about the offense. There were some things on the offense that mostly I would say, and I'm gonna mostly focus on the starters here, that I really liked. I'm going to start with the offensive line. This has been a unit along with the secondary on defense that you and I have been talking about probably since the season ended last year. And I don't know about you, man, but I thought the starters did pretty well when they were in there. I thought that Collaros was pressured a couple of times, but in watching it, I felt like it was mostly due to really good coverage by the Argos and Collaros having to hold the ball a little longer. There were some times when he had to scramble out of the pocket, but I don't really feel like he was pressured all that much, like, initially, if you know what I'm saying. So I really thought that the offensive line group played pretty well. What did you think?
I would totally agree with that. I thought that the Collaros most of the time had a nice pocket to make his decisions in. I was really keeping my eye on Swindle as much as I could, and I thought that he did a tremendous job while he was in there. So, really positive start for this offensive line that, you know, I think that basically is really set in the four positions. The only question mark, obviously, is the right tackle position with the rookie Swindle in there, but I thought he did great.
Yeah, and of course we have to say that they weren't really playing the Argos' top-tier defensive line, but you can only go up against who you go up against. This could be something that sort of gives this offensive line unit a little bit of not momentum, that's not the right word. Confidence is the word I'm looking for. There you go.
Yeah.
Going into the season, because they're going to face these guys again this upcoming week, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But, it was, again, it's the preseason, so, like, I don't know about you, but when I watch, like, games during the regular season, you're kind of following the ball and seeing how the plays develop. But in this, you kind of focus on individual players that you don't normally watch. And I spent a lot of time watching the offensive line, especially when the starters were in there. And like I said, I came away fairly impressed. So I think this unit could be maybe not the best offensive line in the CFL, but I think they're going to do a heck of a job and do good enough to keep our quarterback upright and hopefully help us win a few games.
I certainly hope so. Now, the offense as a whole was kind of meh. The first grouping offense, like the starters, they looked a little rusty at first, especially Collaros. First couple drives weren't that impressive, but I was happy to see that last drive he was in there, they really put a nice march together and scored a touchdown. So that's what I'm hoping to see in the first regular season game coming up.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. I got Caleros' numbers here. He finished 10 of 17 for 127 yards and a touchdown. But like you mentioned, it was that last drive that he was in there. I believe it was end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter. He went 5 for 7 on that drive, including 4 straight completions to end the drive, which finished with a touchdown pass to Brian Timms. That's what I was expecting to see through most of their time in there. So seeing him get off to a little bit of a rough start was tough, but I feel like they did knock a little bit of rust off, and then you started to see them really click, especially Claro started really clicking with these guys, and it was good to see them go out on the high note, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I expected to see from them, and that's what I expect to see from them going forward. Hopefully Claros and company has knocked up all the rust and they're ready to go.
We got to talk about these receivers before we finish the offensive side of the ball. These four American guys that this team's got rolling out there, I would put them up there with they're underrated, I think. I was going to say I'd put them up there with the top, but I'm not going to do that. But I think they're severely underrated. We know what we're going to get from Steve Tasker. Oh, my God, nearly turned into Rod Black there. We know what we're going to get from Luke Tasker and Terrence Tolliver. Those two guys are going to be solid. They combined for 4 catches for 64 yards in this game. Kevin Elliott was the team's leading receiver in the preseason, though he only had 20 yards versus Toronto on 1 catch. But Brian Timms, man. Holy smokes. I think we should tell everyone, you and I were texting back and forth a couple days ago, and we were both kind of salivating over Brian Timms. Like, this guy, just he's going out there and he's making plays. He scored the touchdown on the pass from Zach Claris, of course, and I think this guy's going to see a lot of single coverage with the other guys that are in this receiving core. And if what we've seen from his career so far is any indication, he's really going to exploit that big time, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do when the lights are shining bright.
So am I, man. He just shows so much potential. Even from last year when he only got in a couple games, you saw the potential there. And, yeah, this guy is the real deal, I think. He's a star in the waiting. And this season, I think he's going to have, you know, he's going to open up a lot of people's eyes around the league. And fans alike.
If you were playing fantasy, if that unfortunately looks like fantasy is gone, so we're not going to be playing that this year, which sucks. But if that still exists, this guy would be a sleeper pick. This would be a guy that you would go after. If you're going to play those daily fantasy games like the DraftKings or the CFL one, not to give away too many tips, but I'm sure he's not going to cost you very much. I think he's going to put up big numbers. He's going to be that guy that comes out of week one and people are going to be, holy smokes, he had 80 yards and a touchdown or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's going to have a really big year, and I would not be shocked if he cracks the 1,000-yard barrier. I know we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. He's only really played 2 games and 2 preseason games, but I don't know where they found him, but they put him in last year, and he showed flashes, and he's continued that great play into the preseason. Now it's going to be nice to watch him, what he can do over a full season, but I am very excited to see him play.
Yeah, I actually have him on my TSN team right now. Now I'm going to probably tinker with that a bit, but he's at a pretty low cost, so he's a pretty good pick, I'd say.
So that's about all I have to talk about offensively. We could talk about the running game, but come on, we're talking about the Ticats here, so really not much to speak of. We know C.J. Gable's going to do C.J. Gable things, and I did think that Ross Scheuermann did play pretty well, but there's not really much to talk about with the running backs. So if you'd like to, Mike, take away the defensive side. What did you pick up on the defense in this game against the Argos?
Well, the one thing that standed out the most was the defensive line. I mean, pressure all game long. They had 7 sacks in total on the night, and that's a huge number. Now, I guess you can't take too much away from that considering it's preseason, but hell, preseason or not, 7 sacks is just a crazy amount of sacks. So that's the one thing, the one big thing that I took away from this game was all the pressure from that defensive line. I think we have one of the best defensive lines in the league on paper right now. You know, Adrian Tracy's going to be, I think he's going to step up his game to another level this season. John Chick is John Chick. Teddy Laurent is the big man in the middle, and Atkinson's, he didn't play, I don't believe, but you know, you got to think that he's going to step up his game as well this season.
It's insane to think that they had 7 sacks, because it really didn't feel that way watching the game. I noticed, okay, they're getting some pressure, they're doing well, and then to come home and be like, they had 7 sacks? It almost, like, snuck up on me. I do want to get your opinion on one of them, though. The very first one of the game, Adrian Tracy's. Do you agree with me that that was a coverage sack? That I thought, and I know you're going to talk about the secondary in a bit, But that was the one thing that stuck out to me when I saw that sack. It was like, whoever the quarterback was, I can't remember who it was at the time. Maybe it was McLeod Bethel Thompson, I think, but I'm not entirely sure. It could have been Jeff Matthews. But I just thought that it was he had to hold on to the ball a little too long, and it allowed Tracy to get loose and get the sack. I was impressed with the secondary, and that is something that I think we're going to hopefully see this season, where each section of the defense helps the other one out. What did you think?
I'd have to either say that it was a covered sack, or it was inexperience from the quarterback just not being able to read the defense right. But either way, I'll take it. I mean, a lot of the starters in this secondary weren't playing. So if the backups are performing well and making quarterbacks hold on to the ball, allowing the defensive line to come in and get that sack, then that's a really good sign, I'd say.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the secondary. We're going to talk about the game this week upcoming and who's in and who's out and stuff like that. But, I want to get your opinion just on the secondary as a whole. Did you think they played well? Like, what were your thoughts?
I thought they played well in the first half. They really shut down that Argos offense, I thought. But then later on in the game, obviously, the Argos put up some points. Even that beautiful pass that the Argos quarterback had in the second half, the touchdown catch in the end zone, the one-handed play. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, essentially the game-winning score.
Yes, I thought that whoever was covering that guy, you can't have much better coverage than that. That Argos receiver just made an outstanding catch. So I think that's a good sign for this season coming up. I think they played well overall.
Yeah, I think this game is really the tale of two halves. Like I said, the Ticats got out to a 16-0 lead, and then the Argos put up 23 straight and won the game. But with the starters and some of that second unit in there with Mazzoli, because Mazzoli is a backup, but we've seen him start in this league, and I think he can start in this league. He's a de facto starter, if you will. So when they were in there, both offensively and defensively, I felt the Ticats were head and shoulders better than the Argos. Now, again, the Argos did not play a full complement of their starters, so it's tough to gauge. But you can only go out there and play the competition you're playing against. And I thought they went out there. The defense didn't allow a first down when the starters were in there. Like, that's incredible.
I don't understand why Ray didn't play. But, usually the starters play more in the second preseason game than they would in the first. But I guess teams are starting to change that up because the Red Blacks did a similar thing this preseason as well. But yeah, I liked what I saw from, especially when the starters were in there.
Well, maybe they didn't play Ray because the Argos gave up 7 sacks, a couple of them to the guy they had starting there. Last thing they need to do is lose Ricky Ray to a big hit in the preseason. Yeah. Maybe they're keeping him shrink wrapped. I know you can't do that with player. Like, I know he's going to get hit at some point in the season, but if he gets hit and hurt in a regular season game, at least you can justify that. Could you imagine the uproar if he got hurt in a preseason game?
It would be, yeah, maybe it's a smart move on their part.
Anything else defensively you'd like to touch upon?
Not really. It's tough. Even when I talk about the secondary, I feel like I'm kind of duping the listeners because it's so hard to gauge how they do, especially on TV, especially when it's a stream on the internet. So, yeah, I don't have much more to touch on the defensive side of the ball, really.
Oh, you brought up the stream. How was it this year? This is what, I think the third season they've done it. Was it just as good as the previous two?
Yeah, it was great. There was no hiccups, no lagging or anything like that. It lagged a bit in the fourth, but I think that was my fault because the laptop I was using was running out of power. So, thumbs up towards the Ticats, another successful stream.
Why aren't more teams doing this? Like, we talked last week about everyone complaining about TSN's not broadcasting enough preseason games, and there's 5 preseason games they're not showing. Why aren't the other teams that don't get their preseason games out there, why aren't they taking a lead from the Ticats here? 3 games now, 3 seasons this team has done this. You'd think someone would have picked up on it by now and copied it or talked to the team and been like, how do you do this? Let's do it ourselves. But nothing, crickets. It's kind of crazy, no?
Yeah, it is kind of weird. It's obviously they're just running off of the Jumbotron feed, I'm assuming. So it can't be that hard to do, and I don't understand why other teams don't follow their lead. But whatever, I guess we'll just be the best franchise in the league.
Yeah, that won't ruffle any feathers. I want to talk special teams for a bit before we get through with this game. Obviously, we're going to talk about the kicking situation that's been settled now. But before that, Brandon Banks had a really nice return to open that game, and it's nice to see him back doing that. Like, he didn't take it to the house, but he had a big return that sets up the team a good field position. That's the type of stuff you want to see from Brandon Banks. I got to feel that the guy, having taken a pay cut this offseason, he's got a chip on his shoulder. And he's a guy, when people doubt him, usually comes up big. I'm not going to say we're going to see a return to a couple years ago where he was returning everything known to mankind. But to see that, it's nice. Because last year, the coverage units and the blocking schemes on special teams were less than stellar. So to see that in a preseason game, I was very happy with it. What about yourself?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved the first return he had. He was running side to side at first, but then he got the corner and really had a nice return. And we don't need to have him return back touchdowns on every single punt or every single kickoff. You know, obviously that's not going to happen, but we just need him to give the offense good field position. And if you give Zach and this offense, reasonable field position, they're going to put up points. It's so important in the CFL to get that good field position, because if you don't, then you're stuck back and it's such a big field and it's tough to get into field goal range. So we just need him to, get those yards, and occasionally bring it back to the house. So, yeah, I was really excited to see him on that first kickoff return do a good job.
Well, and you see how it pumps up the rest of the team. So the offense out there going, Speedy got us to the 50. Okay, let's go out there. Let's punch it in. Like, it gets everyone's juices flowing, and I think that's a good thing for the team. Kicking-wise, we didn't see much. They didn't kick a field goal in this game at all, so can't really judge anyone there. But I will say that Sergio Castillo, who has won the kicking competition, will be the team's kicker, at least for week one. We saw him punt 7 times, and he had a fairly decent average, 43, 44 yards, something in that neighborhood. So
I think it was a little higher than that. I thought it was like 47.
Was it? No, you might be right. Maybe I might be not giving him enough credit here. I thought it was mid-40s. You could be right that it's the high 40s. Let me pull up the stats here, Mike, and you can correct me if you did. But the main point I'm getting at here is I thought he played pretty well, and he's primarily known as kickoffs, punting. Yeah, you're right. 47. He had an average of 47 yards. You're correct. I stand corrected, sir. But he's always been known as kind of a kickoff or a field goal, like a place kicker. So to see him do well in the punting aspect, I think that is probably why we saw him win the job. I do also think that going into camp, I feel like he was the favorite, had a little bit of CFL experience, had been with the team before. But to see him excel in the punting aspect, which is apparently the weaker of his game, that was pretty nice to see.
Yeah, I was really impressed with those punts. You know, good hang time, good yardage. You know, we didn't see him kick field goals, but we saw him kick, I believe, 3 or 4 extra points, which is, a mid-range field goal now. So, and he nailed, 3 out of 4 or 2 or 3 or whatever it was. So, listen, I've been worried about the kicking game all off season, and we might have a kicker on our hands. I'm hoping that we do.
Oh my God, I nearly forgot. You mentioned the punts, and how can we not talk about Connor McGough? We completely, both of us. This kid, both on offense and defense, he to me was the player of the game. If we were handing out player of the games, like last week against Ottawa's Kevin Elliott, this kid, 2 sacks, had a couple of awesome tackles on special teams. Everyone talked about after he was drafted, the things I kept hearing from people was he's got a motor. He's got a very high motor. You're going to see this guy go, 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 go. That was on full display against the Argos. I'm so glad it came back to me, because I would have kicked myself after we were done if we hadn't brought him up. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him. I mean, 2 sacks, that's a really good stat for a rookie player coming in. Now, is he a defensive tackle or is he a defensive end?
He's an end.
Yeah, because I thought he was a little light to be in the middle. So, yeah, to find a defensive end that's also a Canadian that can play in this league is pretty rare. So, not that one preseason game makes a career, but this guy, like you said, has a ton of athleticism, and we saw that especially on special teams.
Well, it's funny. This is the second year in a row that people have gone, why the hell did Ken Austin pick that guy so high? And it's the second year in a row now, at least early on, one preseason game. I know we're projecting a little here, but so far it looks like a pretty darn good pick for the Ticats, because he was just flying out there. And And again, like I said, that's what came as advertised. They said he would make his hay on special teams and he would be a guy that doesn't quit. And that was on full display against the Argos on Friday. And kudos to him. I thought he was awesome.
Absolutely. The guy was on fire that night.
All right. So if you're ready to move on from talking about the preseason game, we can get into the news. Not a ton of news to talk about this week, Mike. Pretty much just cuts. Cuts from around the league, from the Ticats to every other team. They made their final roster cuts. So let's talk about the Ticats first. They cut you can find the list of guys they cut. There was, I think, 23-odd names, 23, 24 names on the list. Most of them were rookies. You didn't really see very many veterans go. In fact, I only saw two off the top of my head, maybe three. Well, if you count, like, Travis Lee as a veteran, because he did have a little bit of time with the team before. But it was really just Matt Wells, who was a backup linebacker last year with the team, and Dominique Ellis, which was obviously the surprise to everyone. He started both games at Sam linebacker for the Ticats in the preseason. He was the guy that I had pegged to be the Sam going into the season. I guess it's now going to be the former New York Giant Will Hill, who will be playing Sam linebacker for the Tabbies, at least in week one. But yeah, the Ellis release came as a surprise to me. But other than that, it was a lot of rookies, and I'm not sure if I said it on the show or if I wrote it in a piece for Three Down or if I was just chatting with a friend, but I said rookies were going to have a hard time making this team. This is a very deep veteran team. So any of the rookies that did make the team, there's maybe two or three, not counting draft picks, of course, that actually made the teams. A few were on the practice roster, but it's going to be tough for rookies to crack this team. But yeah, Ellis was really the only surprise. What did you think when you saw the list of names released? Was it just your eyes drawn to Ellis just like mine were?
Yeah, basically just Ellis, because, you know, Will Hill is a guy that had some success down south. I know he signed a contract for about $7 million at one point. So this is a guy that comes into the league, and then maybe you would think that he has a bit of a big head and he's not willing to put in the work, but apparently he has put in the work and he's made a big impression on the Ticats coaching staff. So I'm looking forward to seeing what this guy can do at that position, because, like you said, I also thought that Ellis would be penciled in at that Sam linebacker spot as well.
Well, with Hill, he was a safety in the NFL, so which is where, if you recall, Eric Harris is going to play when he finally gets healthy with New Orleans Saints. So that safety position, that free safety position especially, is kind of the closest you'll get to an NFL equivalent to the Sam linebacker in the CFL. So we know Hill has got size and can hit, and we also know he's got a little bit of speed. So he's got that nice combination that could work. And obviously he impressed Ticats brass enough to win that starting job over Ellis. And now Ellis is without a job, unfortunately. And I thought he played well. I didn't focus in on him because this is probably a fault of my own. I honestly thought he was kind of a lock at that position, to be honest with you. So a bit of a mistake on my part. I guess I should have been paying a little bit more attention and not gotten too big ahead of myself when I was like, hey, I picked that guy and he's going to get the job. I guess I screwed up there. Sorry, pal.
You know, it's so hard to tell. You know, like, he could be, you know, on first team off our defense the whole training camp, and then all of a sudden there's this guy that you don't expect to come in, and that's exactly what happened. So I'm pretty sure that anyone that has any knowledge of the team would have thought that Dominique Ellis would have been a starter on this team.
So, like I said, teams around the league cut players, and I'm not going to go through every single one. I didn't go through every single one with the Ticats. I'm not going through every single one with the other teams, but I did write down a few names from each team that they're more notable cuts, guys that people probably know by name. Ottawa let go of Shakir Bell and Torrey Gurley. Montreal released Jovan Johnson, who has, I'm sure you saw, since signed with the Saskatchewan Roughriders. The Argos' big one was obviously Drew Willey. Winnipeg released Kenny Stafford, and he's since gone back and signed with Edmonton. BC didn't have a huge name. I guess their biggest would have been Brett Blazko, who was, I believe, a second or third round pick of theirs just a year ago. So I guess Danny Vandervoort kind of took his spot. Calgary, again, not a ton of huge names. Mitchell Gale, obviously, was the quarterback on the outside looking in. Ben D'Aguiar, who played for McMaster, been a special teams guy in Calgary for a few years, bit of a surprise. Edmonton let go of Kendall Lawrence, and Saskatchewan let go of a pair of quarterbacks in Brian Bennett and some guy named Vince Young, and let go of the running back Anthony Allen. So those are the ones that I think are kind of the bigger names out of the guys that were let go. Any of those really surprise you?
I thought the Shakir Bell one surprised me a bit. You know, when he signed in Ottawa, I thought that he'd probably be the starting running back this year for the Red Blacks, even though they have a lot of talent at that position. But I guess he fumbled a couple times in preseason, and that didn't probably help his cause. So that was probably the biggest surprise to me, but there are a couple in that grouping that are a bit of a surprise. Javon Johnson, not a huge surprise, I guess, because he's getting up there in age, and the Alouettes are trying to get younger on that defense. But in another way, it is a surprise because they've lost a lot of talent, veteran talent, on that defense. So those are, you know, those two guys were probably the biggest surprises for me.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that Kenny Stafford was let go. He was brought in, I believe, in the offseason after he was let go by he was with Montreal last year. He got cut with Daron Carter. So I thought that, you know, bringing him into Winnipeg had lost Ryan Smith in the offseason to retirement. I thought Stafford could fill a role there. I know they still have Clarence Denmark and Weston Dressler and Darvin Adams, but I felt like Stafford could have found a role there. So I was a little surprised. And his was like the first one, like he tweeted out that he had been cut and and the team hadn't done it yet. So his was kind of the first one to come out. So I was a little shocked by him. I'm with you on Bell. I thought when they signed him, I was like, he has a good shot. But there were three good running backs in Ottawa with Powell, Bell, and Moses Madu. So I knew one of them, if not two of them, were going to get let go. And Powell didn't play the last preseason game, so I figured that meant that he was safe. And like you said, Bell fumbled a couple times, and Madu didn't, so that pretty much sealed his fate. You know, Vince Young, I guess we kind of got to talk about Vince Young. I wasn't really surprised he gets hurt. He's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. I think we talked about it last week. I'm not really shocked that they would let him go. They don't owe him anything. I think he would have been just behind. Now, some are saying, oh, maybe he'll come back to the team, but apparently he's gone back to Texas to rehab. So I think we've kind of seen the last of Vince Young in the CFL. I would be very, very surprised if he returned to the Rough Riders after he was healthy.
Yeah, I can't see it happening either. From all I've heard, he wasn't really having the best training camp either. Just, you know, he had the injury, but before that, his overall play wasn't impressing anyone. So I'd be shocked if we saw him again in the CFL. I think he's done with professional football, you know, and hats off to him for coming in and putting in the effort and trying to resurrect his career. It just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. It would have been nice to see him. You always want to see, like, you want that feel-good story. You want that Hollywood ending, and rarely does life give you that. So you're right, though. No. Kudos to him for coming up and giving it a shot. But, hey, just another guy that came up here that people down south – I'm not saying Vince himself thought this or people who are in the know, but another guy people down south thought, hey, he's going to go out there, he's going to tear things up, and didn't even make it to the regular season. So I think CFL observers are not surprised by that, but – I'm sure there's a few Americans down south going, how did that happen? How did he not go up there and become the superstar? But
I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that. And the Anthony Allen release is – I've always liked Anthony Allen as a running back. I thought he's a good running back and probably deserves, you know, if not a starting job in the CFL, then a backup role. But I don't know, man. He's had a tough ride with those Rough Riders. You know, a couple of years ago he gets cut because he fumbled, or, you know, Corey Chamberlain was on that craziness of if you fumble in a game, you're going to be held out and all that stuff. So he's had a rough ride with the Rough Riders. So, you know, I kind of felt sorry for him, but that's just that's football for you, right?
So the other release I want to talk to you about is Drew Willey. And here's why. So over the last couple of days, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but there's been a small segment of Argonauts fans online that have tried to twist this Drew Willey trade into not being the unmitigated disaster that it is. And I just can't wrap my head around anyone thinking that dealing a all-star player who TJ Heath was in 2016, a first-round pick, which turned into the first overall pick, and a third-round pick that they owe them in next year's draft is in any way not terrible, considering they got, what, 6 games out of this guy before they let him go? And he barely started. Like, how can anyone look at that and not just go, this is one of the worst trades since the Eskimos traded Ricky Ray?
It was a terrible trade. I mean, I don't know how anyone could or would want to defend that. So I don't know if they're just thinking that it doesn't really affect them in the future, but it does, because, you know, it wasn't a fifth round or a sixth round draft pick. It was a first round, and those are important draft picks. Now, you might say that CFL draft it doesn't have much of an impact on the team right away as, say, you know, the NFL or the NBA or whatever other sports league draft, but it's very important down the road. because these players are going to be developing and they could be, you know, full-blown starters in the future. So to say that it won't affect the team is a little bit ludicrous.
And again, they essentially traded two picks and a player for nothing. Nothing. They have nothing to show for it. As of today, the Toronto Argonauts have absolutely nothing to show for that trade, except they spent some money on Drew Will. They gave him $70,000 signing bonus that they're not going to get back, and they're out a first round. Like, I just don't understand how anyone can look at this and go, it's not a big deal. It is a very big deal. You can. I saw someone told me that they thought Toronto has good Canadian depth, so they're not that worried. But so what? You can always use more Canadian depth. No team has enough Canadian talent. You are always looking to acquire more. And again, it's not like they dealt a fifth-round pick or a conditional-round draft pick for a quarterback, and he didn't pan out, so they let him go. We see that happen all the time where teams will trade for a player. It doesn't work out to let them go, but they gave up a late-round draft pick, or they gave up a negotiationless player. The Toronto Argonauts gave up a first-round pick that turned into the first overall pick in the draft. They were the worst team in the CFL last year. They could have had a chance to, A, get Drew Willie. If they really wanted Drew Willie, they could have had him in the offseason because Winnipeg was probably going to release him. And two, they would have then still had the first pick in the draft, which they could have used on a player to help their team. Now what they have to show for this trade is bupkis. And for anyone to be out there going, oh, no, there's nothing wrong with this. It's not going to set them back. It's not a big deal. You're out of your mind. You're completely out of your mind.
Yeah, it was a total desperation play by the Argonauts, by Jim Barker and Scott Milanovic. I mean, they were completely in desperation mode at that point of the season last year. It was a disastrous season for the Argonauts. They, you know, released all those receivers. They made that terrible trade for Drew Willie, which they thought was going to be their future quarterback of this team. And it was just a terrible, terrible move on their part. They did a disservice to the Argonauts by making that trade because, I mean, obviously we know that they were on their way out not too long after. So, yeah, it was just a total idiotic move by them.
Where do you rank this move as far as all-time bad trades go? Because to me, it's probably in the top three. Off the top of my head, I can think of three or four trades that I might put in the same class. The Ricky Ray trade from Edmonton, obviously, would be ranking really high up there. Maybe that's the only one that would be worse than this. The trade that Hamilton made to get Simone Lawrence and Jeremiah Mazzoli from Edmonton was a pretty bad trade for the Eskimos. I believe they sent them Nathan Kanya and Carson Rockhill, and they got Craig White, Simone Lawrence, and Jeremiah Mazzoli. Kanya, Rockhill, and White, who went back to Edmonton after he was with the Ticats, are all out of the league, and Simone Lawrence has been an all-star with the Ticats. Jeremiah Mazzoli started games for them. That was a terrible trade, and the Ticats trading Arlan Bruce and the Argos trading Arlan Bruce were two really bad trades in my estimation. But other than that, I think I might put this is either the number one or number two worst trades of the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I'd put it above the Ricky Ray trade because I believe they got a kicker out of the deal. They got something. The Argonauts got absolutely nothing. So I would put, even, you know, it might ruffle some feathers in Edmonton because they traded away a Hall of Fame quarterback, but it turned out in the long run pretty good for them. I mean, Mike Riley came in and we know what he's done in Edmonton. So yeah, I'd have to put the Willie trade above that. And that might be crazy to some people, but that's just what I think.
Well, here's the Ray trade. They traded Ray to Toronto, obviously, for Stephen Giles, our favorite one-eyed wombat. They got Grant Shaw, and they got a 2012 first-round pick that they turned into – they traded to the BC Lions, so I'm not entirely sure what – again, I'm looking at it. There's a lot of moving around here. But anyway, that's what they got for Ray, and – they took a kind of a 2-year bump there. They weren't very good in 2012. They weren't, although they did make the playoffs, and they were horrible in 2013. But like I said, they got Mike Riley out of the deal. And so from the Edmonton side of things, yeah, it was a pretty bad trade, but it wasn't the worst. Like looking back on it in hindsight now, especially with how Ricky Ray has not played a full season, I think maybe since 2012. So Ray gets hurt all the time. It still was like when you look at it at the time, it was like, what are you doing? And I still think it's a pretty bad trade. But you might be right. This Drew Willie trade might top it simply because if you look at the trade for Edmonton, they got Grant Shaw. Yes, he's a punter and he's no longer with the team, but he was a pretty good punter for them for a number of years. That was something. What did the Argos get? in trading all those picks and a player? They got nothing. So maybe you're right. Maybe Drew Willie, the trading of Drew Willie was the worst trade in the last like 5 to 10 years.
It's if not the worst, it's definitely number two, I'd say.
Okay. You know what? The segment I loved last year that we did, Bozo of the Week. And I've decided this week, we talked before the show, I had a guy that I was going to nominate for Bozo of the Week. So, Mike, if you will allow me, may I take this segment off you for 1 week in order to get something off my chest about a certain Bozo this week?
I will allow it, and I will say that we will do the Bozo this season, but we're not going to push it. You know, if there's no Bozo that stands out from, you know, from 1 week, then we won't do it. But if there's a guy that really stands out, then we will. So just a little update for the listeners out there.
I think that's the best way to do it. And I think, in my opinion, I think this guy who I'm about to name meets the standard for Bozo that you set last season. I think this guy fits right in with the company that we brought in last year. And it's Edmonton Eskimos rookie receiver Nate Behar. Now, we all know that Nate Behar had a contract holdout, didn't show up to camp. Then the word came out today, we're recording this on Monday evening, that he had or is in negotiations with Edmonton to finally get to the team. So he's missed all of training camp. He missed all of the preseason. That's never a good thing for a guy, an incoming rookie. So he's behind the eight ball already. So that was a bit Bozo-ish, but you can maybe blame that on his agent. Who knows? What you can't blame on his agent is Nate Behar tweeting out in French, and I'm not going to say it in French because I don't speak French, but I will use the English translation. I am a slave. That's all he wrote. And I'm sorry. What? I see this, and you sometimes see this, not necessarily just from professional athletes, but from people in general, where they will compare themselves to a slave or say that I'm a slave or I'm treated like a slave. And he is in negotiations to sign a contract worth in the neighborhoods of $70,000 a year. That's not slave wages, sir. That's far from it. And to say that you're a slave, I understand, like, because he's only allowed to negotiate with one team, there's a draft process, but that's the way pro sports work. You don't want to be treated like a slave? Go get another job. This is asinine to come out and say something like this and to think that this won't in any way be taken poorly. There, you cannot read this and then take Nate Behar's side. This is point blank clear Bozo behavior. And it's been a show for this kid pretty much since the day after he got drafted. But seriously, comparing yourself to a slave, if that's not Bozo material, I don't know what is.
Yeah, this guy is, I mean, he's the front runner for Bozo of the year as far as I'm concerned. Using that word in this context, you know, $70,000, to me anyways, is a damn good wage. So for him to say that is just ridiculous. It actually makes me kind of upset. Just the thought of it. Who does he think he is? He's a rookie coming in. You know, he should be happy. Not to say that you can't negotiate and try to get yourself the best deal possible, but this guy has a chance to play professional football, presumably a game he loves, for money. And he just doesn't understand what he's saying. He must not, because he must not understand the word slave, because that's just, it's just, it. I'm baffled at the whole thing. I'm baffled.
Well, he was asking apparently for number two pick. Like, he wanted the same contract as the guy who went second overall. But you didn't go second overall. You went fifth overall. And you might think you're the best player in the draft class. You might think you're better than the four guys picked ahead of you. That's fine. But you get paid based on where you got picked. And that's where he got picked. You didn't get picked second. So you don't get second overall money. You get fifth overall money. And I'm not one of those guys who thinks, oh, you're a rookie, you have to earn it. I do believe that to a certain extent. But at the same time, these guys are very highly valued. The team in Edmonton obviously thinks very highly of him, or they wouldn't have selected him so high. So that gives you a little bit of leeway as well. But to come out and say something like this, it's like, dude, yeah. I couldn't think of anyone better to bestow the moniker of Bozo of the week on than Nate Behar this week.
He can think that, you know, obviously, but keep it to yourself. I mean, you're just hurting your own career with those kind of comments. I mean, other teams are going to look at him and say, this guy's a bozo. So, yeah, it's just a very, very stupid move on his part.
Stupid, stupid, stupid. Couldn't say it better myself. Okay, enough about the bozos. Let's move on. We got a regular season game, a game that matters, coming up this Sunday for the Ticats. We've done the game. We did the game preview last week for the preseason game, but this is a different beast, Mike. This is a regular season game. The Ticats, they will kick off their 2017 season in the exact same place they kicked off their 2016 season at BMO Field in Toronto against the Argos. There's one big difference in this game, though, Mike, and we will recall the Ticats pasted the Argos last year in the season opener. But the big difference here is there's a different guy behind center. He wears number 4. He's a franchise guy. He, Zach Kolaros, is going to play in this game. That's a big difference going into this game. But let's break this thing down, offense, defense. Mike, offense, let's hear what you got. What are you looking for? What are you hoping to see? What do you think is going to happen with the offense on Sunday afternoon?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I don't think that this game is going to be, you know, similar or the same as last year's game. I think the Argonauts are going to come out, and it's going to be a hell of a fight, I think. They're not going to lay down with Trestman at the helm. He's going to have them prepared to play some football. So I think we're going to see a good game. Now, offensively, I'm looking at, like I've been talking about for a long time, I'm looking at their offensive line. I'm going to look at how much time Zach Kolaros has in the pocket, how much time he has to make decisions, all that stuff. So the main thing I'm looking at is the offensive line, but also Kolaros. I want to see him be the Kolaros of 2015, you know, that MOP caliber quarterback that we know he can be. Now, we saw some rust in the preseason game. I don't want to see any rust. I want to see him come out. First drive of the year, I want to see some points put on the board. You know, I just want to see this offensive unit look crisp. And I know that's tough to do in a first regular season game because of the nature of the CFL in general, you know, the short training camp and only two preseason games. But I'm just looking forward to seeing this offensive unit come out and put it together.
Do you think they will? Do you think they'll be able to put it together? Do you have the faith that these guys will all click? We saw it at the end, like you said, of that preseason game. It looked like kind of everything came together. Do you think we're going to see that? Or do you just hope we're going to see it? Or do you actually think we're going to see the Ticats maybe put up 30-some-odd points this game? Do you think the offense is going to click?
It's going to be a tough challenge because the defensive line of the Argonauts is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, these guys are a talented bunch, and they're going to be trying to bring the heat. But, yes, I do believe that we will see the offensive unit do a really good job. I believe that.
Now, maybe we're homers, or maybe it's just me, but I just look at this offense, and I see so many weapons that, again, I said earlier, I think this receiving core is underrated. As I've heard people throw around worst in the East, worst in the league. I think that's absolutely ridiculous, but I think that there's so many weapons on here. I can't see this team not clicking over a full 60 and finding a way to get, you know, 28 to 35 points. And I agree with you. I don't think this is going to be a cakewalk at all. In fact, when we get to do our picks at the end of the show here, this was the one game that I had the hardest time going, okay, like, you know, my heart's saying pick the Ticats, but my head's going, Trestman at home. They're going to be well prepared. There's no doubt about it. I don't think we're going to see a 42, I think it was 42-21 was the final in the opener last year. I don't think we're going to see something like that. I think it's going to be a tighter game. I'm a little bit more bullish on the Argos than a lot of people are, but I think this is going to be a dogfight, and I think we're going to see some haymakers. I think we're going to see more of the game that we saw on Labor Day last year than the game we saw to start the season. I'm going to be in the stands for this one. I can't wait to watch. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and one other person that I'm looking at is Mike Jones. Now, we thought that maybe they'd go with 5 American receivers, but it looks like Mike Jones is going to be the one Canadian in that receiving group. And, you know, he didn't necessarily catch a lot of balls in the preseason, but from what I saw, he looked, you know, pretty good. This guy has a ton of speed, and that's exciting to me where he'll be playing that in that Z or Y position or whatever it is on the wide side of the field. We got a really speedy guy out there. I know Spencer Watt had speed too, but this guy, you know, there's some potential there. There's some potential there for some big plays from him.
Oh, absolutely. And if there's one thing we know about Zach Kolaros, it's that he loves to throw the deep ball. And if there's another thing we know about him, it's he's one of the best quarterbacks. And I think if I went and looked back, Derek Taylor, I think, tweeted out that he is the best quarterback when it comes to throwing those wide side throws. So you could see a guy like Jones getting some touches, maybe not a ton, but If Zach sees some something to exploit out there, you know he's going to take advantage of it. He loves throwing the deep ball, and he's pretty darn good at it. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting guy to keep an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to seeing how his career turns out, especially this season. You know, he had the rookie season last year. Now he's just started now, so let's see what he can do.
Yes, it's always interesting to see if guys take that next step in their second season. It'll be interesting to see if he can do that. If you're done with the offense, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little defense here. The things I'm really looking for in this game, Mike, I think it's threefold. I think this team needs to be sound in their coverage. It looks like both Abdul Kanne and Emmanuel Davis will miss this game. So the starting five in the secondary is not exactly what you would call Hamilton's best five. But the group will look a lot like the one that we saw do rather well against the Argos in the final preseason game. So maybe a little bit of a silver lining there. And I think if these DBs can give the front seven just a half second or a second more time to get pressure, I think they can get to Ray. And I think it could be a long day for the future Hall of Famer if these DBs are a little tighter in their coverage.
Absolutely, and it's a little disappointing not to be able to watch Kanne playing the first game. You know, that was our big off-season signing. But I respect the decision. You know, you can't rush these guys back. You know, Butler's not going to be ready. Davis isn't going to be ready, and Kanne's not going to be playing. So those are three talented dudes that will not be in the secondary, which makes me believe that this could be a very high-scoring game. Now, I hope it's not for the Argos. I hope that the guys that fill in for those players do a commendable job and really shut down that Argos offense. But, I'm kind of leaning towards the over in this game, not that the number's set yet. But you'd have to think a lot of points are going to be put up on the board.
Yeah, for sure. Like Courtney Stevens still back there. I think he's going to start at safety. He's a linchpin back there. They got DeMond Washington's probably going to play. He's going to start at probably one of the halfback or corner positions. They got some rookies. Justin Rogers is a guy who's probably going to start. He is. He played in the NFL. I believe he played for the Washington Redskins. So there is still some talent back there, but it's not the group that you wanted to see. The group we wanted to see was like, you want to see Courtney Stephen at the wide side. You want to see Craig Butler at safety. You want to Kanne and Davis at those halfback spots. Like you meant, like Kanne, Davis, Butler are probably all going to miss this game. And those are three all-star players. These are guys who've been all-stars in this league. So to have that much talent sitting on the sidelines because of injuries, it kind of sucks. But it also, if this unit gels and does well, imagine being able to add those guys to the mix, guys you know, proven players. I'm going to look at the glass half full here. I still agree with you. I still think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think these guys are going to be in trouble. They're going against a Hall of Fame quarterback in Ricky Ray. So you never know what could happen. Speaking of Ray, my second point here is, and I think this is something that when we do these defensive talks each week, it's probably going to be people are going to get sick of hearing us talk about it, but pressure. They got to get pressure on Ray. Get in his face, man. No quarterback enjoys being pressured, but I think that that's especially true of Ricky Ray, especially over the last few years where he's dealt with injury troubles. We saw it in the Labor Day game last year. He got beat up, and that was the end of the season. And I'm not saying I want the team to go out there and injure Ray. I like watching Ricky Ray play football. So I want to see, much as I'm a Ticats fan, I'm a football fan. I want to see him play. But he's a guy that you got to get in his face. And if you can do that, if you can knock him around a little bit, you get to him early, get to him often, I think you'll see the Argos offense struggle a little bit.
Yeah, no one wants to see anyone get injured, but you want to see Ray uncomfortable, you know, making quick decisions. Now, I think it's going to be tough to get to Ray all season long because I think Tressman is going to put in that quick release offense like he did with Calvillo. I mean, Calvillo, when Tressman was around, he did not get pressured that often from what I remember. So I believe they're going to put that same scheme in for Ray because they have to. This guy just isn't as effective as any quarterback if there's pressure on him, but especially him because he's such a pocket quarterback and he doesn't have that much mobility. So it's going to be huge. That's a huge part of the game, I believe, to make him very uncomfortable.
Yeah, and Ray's a quarterback that does like to dink and dunk. And this kind of goes into my third point here. The Ticats cannot allow big plays. When it comes to dinking and dunking, you know, there's going to be probably a lot of dump-off passes to Brandon Whitaker, and we know what he can do with the ball in his hands. He makes a couple guys miss, and a 5-yard pickup turns into a 25-yard pickup. But I'm also a little worried, and maybe worried's not the right question, but it's something that I think about. As much as they like, they're probably going to do a lot of quick release, a lot of short stuff. The Argos have some game breakers that can pick up huge yardage at the receiver position. S.J. Green, if he plays, is a guy we know can go out there. And maybe with the knee injury, he's not as fast as he used to be, but he's still a big dude who can make plays. Jeff Fuller, Amonte Edwards, Khalil Payton. These are, you know, outside of Green, probably not household names, but they're all pretty darn good receivers. And remember a couple years ago, Jeff Fuller had a massive game when he was with the Calgary Stampeders against the Hamilton Tiger Cats and helped the Stampeders win that game. So I think the secondary is going to have their hands full, but I think they after what I saw in the preseason, I think they're up to the challenge, but I think it's going to be an interesting game of watching the secondary go up against these receivers and this quarterback. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. They have a lot of talent in that offensive receiving group. You know, like you said, you name them all. Amonte Edwards is a young guy that's coming up that showed a lot of talent last year. Payton's a speed guy. So they have a touch of everything. You know, S.J. Green could be more of a possession receiver now after his injury, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's what Fantuz does, and he is one of the best when he's healthy. So there's a lot of talent and a lot of veteran talent, you know, a couple veteran players that can lead the young guys like Payton and Edwards. So yeah, like you said, I think they're going to have their hands full, but I hope they do a good job, because if they do a good job, then we can say, hey, we covered all these talent receivers well, and we didn't have three of our starters in the lineup.
For sure. Okay, Mike, I think that about does it for the game preview. I think we're just both really excited that this upcoming Sunday we're actually going to get to watch a football game that matters, and that's really nice. But as a tradition, we've done it every year, so this year is no different. It's time to do a little bit of a season preview. Give some predictions, what we think is going to happen. So if you'll indulge me once again, where would you like to start with our season preview? You want to start in the East or you want to start in the West?
Let's start in the West.
All right, let's start in the West. Okay, would you like to go first? Would you like me to go first?
I'll go first. These are the standings in the West I got. BC first, Calgary second, Edmonton third, Winnipeg fourth, and Saskatchewan is fifth.
All right, you know what? You and I do not have much different there. I also have the BC Lions finishing first in the West. I also have the Calgary Stampeders finishing second. I have the Edmonton Eskimos finishing third. But we flip our 4 and 5. I've got the Rough Riders finishing fourth, and I got the Bombers finishing fifth. And that's probably going to rub a lot of people the wrong way out in Winnipeg. But here's why. I'm not sold on Winnipeg. And I'm not sold on them because last year they won a lot of football games because their turnover differential was absolutely ridiculous. They had 30 interceptions last year. The next closest team, which was Hamilton, had 17. This team forced turnovers and they didn't turn over the ball. I still think that they won't turn over the ball a ton, but you cannot expect for them to get that many turnovers in their favor. I'm probably underestimating Winnipeg a little bit. But I'm just, with Matt Nichols at quarterback, I'm not sold there. It's not like I'm super high on Saskatchewan either. I think that they will improve as the year goes on. I think they'll be a better team than they were last year. But yeah, there's just something about Winnipeg. And I keep going back to that turnover differential and think that that's not repeatable year in, year out. So there's always a team. And when we get to the East, there's going to be a team there that I think people are underestimating that I think is going to be a little bit better. There's always one team every year that you're like, I don't think they're going to be very good, and they surprise you. And there's always one team every year you go, I think they're going to be pretty good, and they surprise you in the opposite way. I think Winnipeg is that team this year.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's so hard to predict anything in this league. You know, I was doing a lot of my predictions last night. I'm like, this team could end up there. That team could end up there. But the team that I'm most sure of is the BC Lions. I just think that they are so loaded, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, the talent on that offense is mind-blowing, really. I mean, Jennings, coming into his third year as a starter, is going to take that leap. You know, he had over 5,000 yards last year, had a little bit of trouble with the interceptions. I think that's gonna drop down a bit, the interceptions. And this team is going to take the next step. Now, maybe I'm underestimating Calgary a little bit. I mean, there was whatever they were, 16-2 last year, and they're going to be a great team again, I think. But you know, the acquisitions that BC has made in the offseason puts them above the Stampeders, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think BC and Calgary are the two best teams in the league. I really do think that. I think it's a two-team race up there, and I think I think after that, it's a cluster in the middle there, and then maybe you're looking at a team like Toronto, Saskatchewan, Winnipeg, kind of at the bottom. But no, I think the world of BC this year. I'm totally in agreement with you. I think this is the year that they take that next step. I think this is the year Jonathan Jennings takes that next step. And that's nothing to take away from the Calgary Stampeders. If the season ends and Calgary finishes first, I would not be shocked. But I just really like what BC has done this offseason. And, you know, the rumors are out there. This could be Wally Buono's last season on the sidelines. The last time those rumors were out there, BC went on to win the Grey Cup. Mm-hmm. We'll get to who we have winning the Grey Cup later. I'm not saying I have BC winning, but it would not shock me if at the end of all this, BC's the team hoisting the cup. I really like what they've built. They're going to be a fun team to watch, and I think they're going to win a lot of football games, 14, 15 games easily, I think, for BC.
Yeah, and I think Jennings has the potential to get 5,500 to 6,000 yards passing if he stays healthy the whole season. I mean, Arsenal, Burnham, Williams, Moore, Iannuzzi, I mean, these guys are a scary, scary bunch. There's just, I'm excited to watch these guys play because it's gonna be the greatest show on turf if I could steal the St. Louis Rams from the 90s. It just really excites me to have a team like this put together that I think can put up some amazing offensive stats.
Couldn't agree with you more, sir. All right, let's go to the East Division where our Hamilton Tiger Cats are located. How do you have the East playing out this year?
You go first in the East.
You want me to go first? Okay, so here's how I got it. And we didn't do records because I ended up doing them because I got to do a records thing, predict the records for a piece we're doing for 3Down later this week. But just to let everyone know, these four teams, the way I have them, they are very closely bunched together. There is three wins to me separating first and fourth in the East. Here's how I got it rolling right now. I got the Hamilton Tiger Cats in first. Got the Montreal Alouettes in second, and I got the Ottawa Redblacks in third, and the Toronto Argonauts in fourth. But like I said, when the site's piece, our Fearless Predictions that comes out later this week on 3Down Nation, you'll see the records I have for these teams. I think these four teams are very closely matched. But I got the Ticats 1, Montreal 2, Ottawa 3, Toronto 4. Mike, what do you got?
Okay, I got Ottawa first, I got Hamilton second, I got Montreal third, and Toronto fourth. I also believe that it will be fairly close. I didn't have any records, but I will say Hamilton's record, either 9-9 or 8-10, the usual.
I'll give you the Hamilton record. I got Hamilton finishing 10-8. Again, 10-8, 9-9, 8-10, that's sort of where this team falls. And so I got 10 wins winning the division. I got the Argos in last place with 7 wins. So, again, I just think all four of these teams are so closely bunched together. I think you're going to see a team like Hamilton, I think you're going to see them get off to a really good start. I could see them winning 5-6 of their first 9, first 10 very easily. I think this team is going to get off because, again, it's a veteran team that's been together for quite some time. I think Montreal, you're going to see them. I think they're going to be kind of back and forth all year. They're probably going to go on like a 4-game winning streak, and then they'll go on a 3-game losing streak. And you're going to see them be very 500-ish. And with Ottawa and Toronto, I think Toronto's going to turn it on at the end of the year. I would not be surprised if it takes a while for them to get going. But the Trestman factor is always what was throwing me off. I kept going, do I move them up? And it's kind of the same with Ottawa. Ottawa lost a lot of guys, which is why I'm not as high on them as you are. Just like, I know that they've replaced, you know, Chris Williams is gone and Ernest Jackson's gone, and they brought in Kenny Shaw and they brought in Deontay Spencer, but those guys aren't Chris Williams and Ernest Jackson. I just think that they're going to take a little bit of a downturn there. And I'm not entirely sold on Trevor Harris because every time this guy's had a chance to be the number one quarterback, for some reason or another, be it injury or ineffective play, late in the season, he's kind of folded. And when he was in Toronto, they brought Ricky Ray in off the bench, and Trevor Harris never got back on the field for the Argos. And last year with Ottawa, he got hurt and Burris came back in, and Burris never gave up the starting job. So maybe Harris played a little safe knowing that there was a backup plan there, and he'll really light it up this year. And I say that as a fan of Trevor Harris. I need to see him put it together for a whole season. You know, I just haven't seen him be able to do it. So again, like I said, these teams are so closely bunched together for me that any order that these guys go in, I think would be fair. And like I said before, the team that I think most people are underestimating Like when I was talking about Winnipeg, how I kind of knocked them down. I think Montreal is a team that people out there are not taking as seriously as they should. It's a veteran-laden team. I know they're not used to playing together, but if Darian Durant plays a full season, I can't see them winning any less than 9 games. You know what I mean?
I think that they've lost some pieces on defense, but they're stable at the quarterback position, and that's the most important position in football. So, it was very hard to pick the East because a lot of these teams are kind of question marks, but I put Ottawa at the top because I think they're going to do well in the regular season. I think that Trevor Harris, without a Hall of Fame quarterback behind him, you know, nipping at his heels, I think he will have the full reins and he will be able to make mistakes and not have to worry about some guy coming in and taking his job. So I think there will be ups and downs with him, but overall, I think he will be a really good quarterback for them. Hamilton, I'm just kind of, the 9-9, 8-10 thing is just kind of a bitterness thing because they just can't seem to get over that hump. I think they were 10-8 one year, a couple years ago, but they can't seem to get over that 10-win status. They can't be an elite regular season team, and I just can't say that they will be because of the past. Now the Toronto Argonauts are such an interesting team to me. They could be really good, or they could be last place in the East as I predicted, but I don't know, man. Somebody has to be last, and that's the team that I picked because just of the nature of their offseason, the late hiring of the coach and the GM, and just how they were put together so quickly. So I can see them being a good team, but I'll stick with the last place team for the Argonauts.
All right, let's move on to the playoffs, Mike. Let's start with the semifinals. So who do you got playing in the West semi, and who do you got winning it?
I have Edmonton and Calgary in the semifinal, and I got the Stampeders winning that one. And I have Montreal and Hamilton in the East semifinal, and I have Hamilton winning that one.
Okay, so in the West semi, we have the same matchup. We got Edmonton at Calgary. I also have the Stampeders winning that. In the East semi, however, we have a different matchup. I have Montreal beating Ottawa. So interesting, neither of us have a crossover.
Yes, I think that it'll be a 3-3 from each division, and that's what I like to see that, you know. I like to see as many teams in the East in the playoffs as possible. I predict that no crossover this year, which rarely happens.
Okay, so let's move on now to our conference division finals, whatever you want to call them. What's your West final, and who do you got winning? What's your East final, who you got winning?
Got BC and Calgary in the West final, and I have the BC Lions in a very tight matchup. I think that this is a dream matchup. You know, if they're as good as we think they're going to be, I think it'll be a hell of a Western final. But I have BC just squeaking by the Stampeders to kick them off the mantle. And in the East, I have Ottawa and Hamilton, and I have the Ticats winning that one. I take them because we presume that Claris will be the starting quarterback. He won't be injured, and he has more experience in the playoffs, more experience overall than Trevor Harris. So, Hamilton and BC move on to the Grey Cup for me.
You got the Ticats exercising those red-black demons. Ottawa's been a thorn in the Ticats' side the last few years, so I would not be upset to see them go into Ottawa, especially Ottawa hosting the East Final, knowing that the Grey Cup's going to be in Ottawa, and then the Ticats go in there and spoil it. I would be a very happy man. However, I had the Ticats finishing first, Mike. So obviously they're hosting the East Final against the Montreal Alouettes. I also had the BC Lions finish first, and I got them hosting the Calgary Stampeders. Mike, for Grey Cup 105, you and I got the exact same matchup. I got the BC Lions and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Again, I'm sure people are going to call us homers for picking the Cats to go to the Grey Cup, but I don't think it's unreasonable to think that team's going to go there. And I don't think, and as much as I think Calgary's going to be on a mission this year, I think we're going to hear a lot ad nauseum, probably to the point of us wanting to actually throw up about Calgary being on a redemption tour. I just think this is the year the BC Lions finally get over that Calgary hump that they've been trying to get over the last few years. And yeah, we got the Ticats and the Lions in the Grey Cup. And I think that's going to be a popular choice, in all honesty, across the board. I think you're going to see a lot of people picking those two teams to make the Grey Cup.
Yeah, I don't think Hamilton is a homer pick on our part. I think that experts that watch this league, fans that watch this league, wouldn't think that that's a crazy pick. So yeah, Hamilton, BC in the Grey Cup. Now, winning the Grey Cup, I have, unfortunately, the BC Lions. I think we're going to get our hearts broken once again in the Grey Cup, and the BC Lions are the Grey Cup champions.
I can't disagree with you, except I'm going to disagree with you because this is a homer pick. I'm taking the Ticats to win the cup. I think it can happen. I honestly do. I would not, like I said earlier when we were talking about the Lions, I wouldn't be shocked if they won. And if this matchup happens and BC wins, I'm not going to sit here and go, well, I picked the Ticats and they lost, so I'm an idiot. No, The BC Lions, Calgary Stampeders, like I said, those are the two best teams in CFL. BC was to win the game. It would not shock me at all, but I just couldn't go against them. I think, you know, that the nation celebrates its 105th anniversary, and I think the last big party in Ottawa is watching the Ticats hoist the Grey Cup there, and all those Ottawa fans the last few years that have been chirping me and chirping me and chirping me, well, I'll have to sit there and watch as Zach Caleros and company sip from the chalice. I think it'll be so sweet. I won't be there, unfortunately, because I'm not heading to Ottawa myself for the Grey Cup, but I'll be there with every Ticat fan in spirit, and hopefully, for all you out there who are going, you're going to get a chance to see our Tabbies win the Grey Cup.
I hope you're right. I just...
No, I get it. I guess I'm... Dude, you don't have to.
It's the negative Ticat fan in me that I just feel like there's going to be another heartbreak. But, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Hamilton wins that game. It's a one game. Anything can happen. But I just look at the BC Lions on paper, and I just think that they're the best team, and they should win it. But I certainly hope I'm wrong.
Hey, look no further than last year when a team that had lost twice the entire season went into the Grey Cup against a team that had finished under 500 and who won. Anything can happen on one day. And I think if we get BC and Hamilton in the Cup, I think we're going to be in for a hell of a show because I think you got the best young quarterback in Jonathan Jennings. You got one of the better veteran quarterbacks in Zach Caleros. It's going to be so much fun. Chris Williams is probably going to be healthy by then. That's going to be a hell of a game in Ottawa if those two teams meet.
Yeah, you never know. Weather could be a factor. There's so many variables that could happen. So, yeah, I think that would be a very popular Grey Cup matchup. I think they'd do well with that matchup.
All right, so let's end our season preview with making some award predictions. Now, we only have, I believe, 5 awards we went down. We decided against most outstanding rookie and most outstanding offensive lineman. We're not going to pick those. Picking who's going to win rookie at this point of the year is damn near impossible. And offensive line play, you never really know. That usually goes to the left tackle of the best team in the league. So who knows who's going to win that? So we decided, unfortunately, to let those go. But we did decide to do the other one. So would you like to start at the top with MOP, or would you like to end off with MOP? What do you think is the best way to
do it? Let's end off with MOP.
Okay, so you want to start with Coach of the Year?
Sure.
Who do you got for Coach of the Year?
I'm going to go with Wally Buono. I think that this is probably going to be his last year. He has a hell of a team with him. He's a hell of a coach. It's a hell of a way to go out. So I got Buono.
Yeah, I have Wally Buono as well. You just look at the teams. Calgary, if they don't do as well as it did last year or better, Dave Dickinson's not going to win Coach of the Year. You look at the teams in the East, I don't see any team separating themselves with a 12 or 13 win season that would necessitate that coach winning Coach of the Year. So you look at the team I have predicted as being the best team in the league is the BC Lions, and therefore I have Wally Buono winning Coach of the Year.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Usually how it goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you have winning the Most Outstanding Special Teams Player Award?
I got Chris Rainey.
We're in for a lot of similar picks here, Mike.
I just see this guy. I think he's the best return guy in the league right now. I know that's blasphemy with Brandon Banks on our team, but just even watching him in preseason, this guy is a playmaker. This guy has potential to do a lot of things, returning the ball, obviously, but also on offense. I think that they will plug him in more than they did last year, and he's just a dangerous, dangerous player, an exciting player to watch, and I think he's going to have an outstanding season.
That's who I got winning it as well, and this just came to me as you were talking. You want to talk about heartbreak in a Grey Cup? How about BC wins on a Chris Rainey punt return with a very controversial block in the back call not made? I might cut out my own heart while I watch that game in my basement and end it there, because that would be the ultimate heartbreak if something like that was happening. You could totally see it happening, couldn't you?
I could, yeah, absolutely.
But yes, anyway, Chris Rainey, everything you said, dude, he is a dynamic player, and I think it's his time. I think being on the best team in the league will get him some votes, and I do think that he, even with Brandon Banks, who I love, I think Rainey right now is the best return man in the league, and And I think we're going to see it year's end when he's handed that award. Most outstanding Canadian, Mike. This one, I guarantee you we have different, because there's no way you picked the guy that I picked. But who do you have?
I have Brad Sinopoli.
Oh, now, okay.
You know, he's been a good receiver for the last couple of years. I think that he's going to get more opportunity now with Ernest Jackson and Chris Williams out of that receiving core. I think he'll get more balls thrown his way, and I think he's going to have a good season, over 1,000 yards receiving for him.
So based on what I said, who are you guessing that I have for most outstanding Canadian?
It's a tough one because it's obviously a kind of an outside-of-the-box pick.
I wouldn't say – it's not that it's outside of the box. I just know you wouldn't pick this guy because you don't like him.
Oh, okay. All right, Andrew Harris.
I got Andrew Harris.
Yeah. I thought about picking him. I did. I thought about
really?
It. I did because he's a good player. He is. But why did you pick him?
I just think that he is – I think Winnipeg's going to have a bad year, but I think it's – I just think they're going to rely on him. He's going to be the guy that's just going to do everything for them. I think Matt Nichols is going to take a step back, but I think Andrew Harris is going to get the ball so damn much that it's going to be impossible for him not to pick up this award, even with a – I think Winnipeg's going to finish in last. I think they're going to have a not a great season, but I think he's just going to have so many yards – that I think he's going to flirt with the 1,000-1,000, to be perfectly honest with you. I think he's going to have just so much production in that offense, even if they don't win games, that it's going to be impossible not to give it to him.
Fair enough. I do believe he's a good receiver. So, yeah, that's a possibility. I think he's good at the backfield and receiving. That's one thing I do like about him.
Okay. Most outstanding defensive player. Who do you have here? This I'll admit, this was the toughest one. This and Canadian were the two toughest ones for me to pick someone at. So I don't know if you had a hard time with this, but I had a really hard time picking most outstanding defensive players. Who do you got?
I did have a hard time, and I have Bear Woods.
Okay.
This guy has, I think he has a chip on his shoulder after how he was released, you know, the day before training camp with the Montreal Alouettes. I know he had, he was a proud member of the Montreal Alouettes. He had a lot of loyalty to that team, I believe. And just to get cut like that, I think it put a sour taste in his mouth. And he's gonna be flying out there. He's gonna make a lot of plays. He's gonna feel comfortable with Tressman and Pop. So I think he's gonna have a hell of a year. So I got Bear Woods as the most outstanding defensive player this year.
Well, he's been the East nominee twice in the last 3 years, so would be no shock to me if he won that. I went with a guy who I think may be the most underrated player in the CFL. I went with John Bowman. John Bowman, yeah. Year in, year out, this guy puts up 15, 16 sacks, and no one ever talks about him as being one of the best pass rushers. This guy's going to the Hall of Fame, Mike. And maybe this to me, maybe this is more of a kind of a lifetime achievement award, but I think he's going to do so much for that Montreal defense. I think the offense is going to be better, so it's going to put him in less pressure to do – because we talked a little bit about it, and I didn't touch on it when you mentioned it, but they did lose some guys on defense, but the offense got better, so I think there's going to be more harmony there. I think the Owls are going to have leads more, which is going to allow Bowman to pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. Maybe it's more of I want him to win this award. I want him to finally get the recognition I think he deserves. So that's why I gave it to him, because I don't think that there's a shoe-in for this award. I think this is wide open. So why the hell not? Let's go with John Bowman.
Now, you don't think that 1 year older is going to drop off his play?
I don't. I think he is a lot like John Chick, where I think even though they're a little bit older, they do so much with their body in the offseason that they keep themselves in such great shape that I don't think the drop-off's coming. It's going to come at some point, but I don't think it's coming soon. I don't think it's coming this year, at least.
Yeah, those are guys that really put in the work to make sure they're at top physical shape when the season comes around. So, yeah, I would love to see him win that award. I don't think he's ever won that award, and he would be well-deserving because he's had a hell of a career.
Okay, Mike, the big one. I know who I picked. I don't know who you picked. I have a feeling, though, we might have picked the same guy. So who do you have finishing the year as this league's most outstanding player for 2017.
Yeah, I think that we might have the same pick as well. I could be wrong, but I picked Jonathan Jennings. You know, this guy is on the upward trend. I believe he has the potential to have 5,500 yards to 6,000 yards passing. And he can use his legs as well. He can run the ball. And with all those receivers, all that talent around him, I mean, how could he not have a monster year? So, yeah, I got to go with Jennings. I think he's going to be the best player in the league on the best team in the league.
You're 100% right. That's exactly who I picked for every single thing you've just said. So I don't think I have to say any more. So, hey, anyone out there, you want to give us your predictions, please feel free. We'll probably get them on the show next week. So if you want to make fun of us for where we have – if you want to make fun of me for being a homer, thinking the Cats are going to win the Cup, if you want to chide Mike for being a bad fan for having the Cats lose the Cup, if you think we're all idiots for having John Jennings win the MOP and not, you know, Bull Levi Mitchell or Mike Ryler or anything like that, give us what you got, and we'll come back next week and read them on the show. So that's it for the season preview for us. But one last thing before we go. It's time to do our CFL picks, Mike. Are you doing Pick'em again this year on CFL.ca?
Yes. They had a contest that you pick well before the season starts in week one, and I made my picks and, you know, months ago, I think. But yes, I will be doing the Pick'em as well as the fantasy again this year.
Yeah, so will I. So, yeah, I did the same thing where I made those picks, and my picks might be the same as they are now, but I don't think I won the prize, so... it was kind of a moot point, but they asked in like March or April, like make your picks before like April 15th. And it's like, that's ridiculously, yeah. And you could change them. So it's not even like, I don't even know what the point was.
Yeah. I don't get it either.
All right. So let's start first game of the week, the season opener for everybody. Saskatchewan Roughriders head to Montreal to take on their former quarterback, Darian Durant. Who do you got in that one, Mike?
I'm going to go with the Alouettes. They're at home. I think there's going to be a big crowd on hand. There's going to be a lot of anticipation to see how Darian Durant does. I think he's going to have a ton of motivation to stick it to his team, which I think, you know, I think they made a mistake letting him go, and I think he's going to show them that they made a mistake on Thursday.
Bingo. I'm with you there. Montreal Alouettes. I think Durant's going to have a huge game. I think Saskatchewan's DBs are suspect right now. They went out and signed Javon Johnson after he was released by Montreal, so they need all the help they can get back there. I think Durant picks them apart. I think Nick Lewis goes out there, has a big game. I think Ernest Jackson has a big game, his first game in an Alouette uniform in the regular season. I got the Owls as well. Friday night, Grey Cup rematch in Ottawa. Stampeders on their redemption tour against the Ottawa Redblacks. Who do you have in this one?
Let me go with the Stamps on this one. I think they're, you know, obviously a really good team, and I think that Ottawa is also a good team, but I'm taking the Stamps to, you know, get that redemption back. They'll be highly motivated, and, you know, I think Jerome Messam is going to run over some people, and Bo's going to have a ton of time in the pocket, and I think it'll be close, but Calgary prevails.
You play that Grey Cup 99 times out of 100, the Calgary Stampeders walk away as champions. They just so happened to play that 100th time, and Ottawa won. I got the Stamps in this one. I'll probably be picking Calgary a hell of a lot this year, just because until proven otherwise, they are in the upper tier of this league. They, like I said, BC and Calgary are the two best teams as far as I'm concerned. So until I'm given reason not to pick the Calgary Stampeders, you're probably going to hear me say the Calgary Stampeders an awful lot. Third game of the week, Saturday in BC, we got the Edmonton Eskimos and the BC Lions. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I'm going to go with the Lions. You know, I think Edmonton's a good team, but they're not. You know, they're not the team that they were in 2015 when they won the Grey Cup. Last year they had a ton of trouble with the defense, especially in the secondary. And I didn't really see them make any many improvements in the offseason. So I'm going to say the BC Lions come out strong and really pick apart that Edmonton Eskimo defense.
Uh-oh, it's looking like you and I are going to be probably 4-for-4 in who we picked the same this week. I got the Lions as well. You know, I don't think Edmonton's going to be as bad as a lot of people are predicting. I think this could be a high-scoring game. I think this might be the game of the week. But BC Lions at home, all that firepower, I can't see any way in which the Lions don't win that game. Last game, Sunday afternoon, BMO Field, our Hamilton Tiger Cats take on the Toronto Argonauts. Mike, do I even have to ask who you have in this one?
No, probably not. I got the Ticats. We start off the season hot. We get our first win right off the bat. And like I said earlier, I think it's going to be a good game. The Argonauts are not going to lay down with the first game that Mark Trestman is coaching. But I think the Ticats squeak out a win. I think Claros has a good game. I think, you know, the defense has a pretty good game. And we're celebrating a Ticats win.
I got the Cats as well. Sergio Castillo with a 60-yard field goal to win the game. And then everyone, all the Ticats fans go, oh, maybe he's not so bad. I say that in jest. I don't think he's kicking a 60-yarder. But I got the Ticats as well in this one. I, like I said earlier, I'm going to be in attendance at this one. It's going to be a lot of fun. Sunday afternoon, it's going to be nice by the lake there. I think it's going to be a darn good football game. a lot closer than a lot of people are predicting, other than you and myself, obviously. But, yeah, I got the Ticats winning that one as well. So, sweep across the board, Mike, you and I, Montreal, Calgary, BC, Hamilton. So that means what? We're wrong on, what, two or three of these?
Well, more than likely, but I'm gonna be cocky and see if we go 4-0.
Woo, that would be a hell of a way to start the season.
Yes, it would.
All right, that's it. That's it. We're done. So we got our season preview out of the way. We got our picks out of the way. We'll be doing picks every week, of course. So subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and remember, you can also subscribe now on Google Play and Stitcher. Or you can, as always, listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask Mike or myself a question, we're going to roll back into getting some questions, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks. You can always do that by hitting us up on Twitter. Mike, as I ask every week, your Twitter handle, please.
Mike_Ticats.
You can find me at joshsmith_82. And, of course, you can always post questions for us in the comments section on 3downnation. Or you can fire us off an email at our new email address, podski@gmail.com. So that was episode 76 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.